our summer series with the book of Galatians. You'll find in your bulletin an insert that says challenged and blessed. There's some questions on the front you're welcome to answer during the sermon or take them home and have discussions at home, because I know everyone talks about the sermon when you get home. Right? Right. Thanks, Lois. Okay, so on the inside, you're going to see the scripture for today. We're going to be reading from the beginning of chapter 4. Paul writes, "Think of it this way. If a father dies and leaves great wealth for his young children, those children are not much better off than slaves until they grow up, even though they actually own everything their father had. They have to obey their guardians until they reach whatever age their father set. And that's the way it was with us before Christ came. We were slaves to the spiritual powers of this world. But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law, so that he could adopt us as his very own children. And because you Gentiles have become his children, God has sent the spirit of his son into your hearts. And now you can call God your Abba Father. Now you are no longer a slave, but God's own child. And since you are his child, everything he has belongs to you. Before you Galatians knew God, you were slaves to so-called gods that do not even exist. And now that you have found God, or should I say, now that God has found you, why do you want to go back again and become slaves once more to the weak and useless spiritual powers of this world? You are trying to find favor with God by what you do or don't do on certain days or months or seasons or years. I fear for you. I am afraid that all my hard work for you was worth nothing. Dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to live as I do in freedom from these things, for I have become like you Gentiles were, free from the law." We're going to stop there for today. So as in Paul's special tradition, the way he likes to write things, he goes on and on and on and on about the same things over and over again. Last week we heard all of this same stuff in chapter 3, where Paul argues that God's promises to Abraham precedes and takes priority over the law. That the purpose of the law was to protect and discipline people until Christ came. And now that Christ has come, we are set free. We are made children of God through faith. And this is true for everyone. So he goes on in chapter 4 to reiterate this point just in case the people of Galatia didn't get it the first 50 times. He's going to tell it again. And he's going to say, you are heirs. You are part of this family. Even though you may not be ready or you don't even realize it, you are a part of this family. And how is that possible? Well, the end of one time has come and the beginning of another is here. God has deemed it a right time to send his son, as we read in verses 4 and 5. The fullness of time has arrived, freedom has arrived in the form of a small child. And we are heirs. We are family, part of this larger picture. Yesterday, that picture became very real. We had a baptism here yesterday morning. Mia Margaret Griswold was baptized, and it was a beautiful thing. She was wearing this gown that they said was in their family for 92 years, that her siblings and her mom and her aunt and her cousins and her grandpa and grandpa's siblings, everybody wore this gown on their baptism day. And so Mia Margaret became part of that heritage, just laid around her, clothed her in this family, and became part of a new family, a larger family, your family. And being a part of this new family, this particular family, like all other families, we experience varying levels of health and dysfunction. Nobody's family is dysfunctional but mine? Okay, it's clarifying that. We, all of our families have some of that in them, including this larger family has health and dysfunction. So we have the choice. We can walk away from that particular family. A move may force us to find a new family. We may completely opt out of the family. But that family mark has been bestowed upon us nonetheless. That family mark is there whether we like it or not, and will always be there whether we're ready or not. And for Paul, this mark means that you are an heir, that you are a child of God, purely by God's grace, not the law. No matter how you interpret the law or follow the law, it is not the gift of grace. And so he goes on, as you probably heard in there, why do you keep going back again? Paul asks the people of Galatia. Why do you keep backsliding? Why do you keep turning to something that doesn't give you life? Why do you make choices that turn us away from the grace of God and instead embrace this former state of bondage? I read somewhere this week that Paul diagnoses circumcision gospel as a step back into human religiosity. I thought that was fantastic. But what does backsliding look like today? What does it mean to reject this gift of adoption and liberation and choose instead former patterns of life and religiosity? In asking a variety of different people, of course, I got lots of different answers this week. Some people said it's reverting back to the old ways. It's hypocrisy. It's moving away from the true teaching of the gospel. It's that one step forward and two steps back that happen in our life. But my favorite answer was this. This person said, this continual state of backsliding is complacency. Complacency. Now, this did not come from a church person. This came from someone who's struggling to figure out who God is in his life, struggling to understand how he belongs to anything. And he thinks that his own problem is that he's complacent and that he keeps going back to what he knows to be true in his life instead of taking that step in this gift. So the question is, does it make a difference, a noticeable difference in our lives, to be gifted by God's grace? Does it make a difference? A question was posed to me this week that I thought was fantastic. Does the grace, mercy, and love of God made incarnate in Jesus trump our plans and shape our lives? Or do we shape our faith to fit the lives we're already planned? I'm going to ask that again. Does the grace, mercy, and love of God made incarnate in Jesus trump our plans and shape our lives? Or do we shape our faith to fit the lives we've already planned? I'm going to stand here and confess that I am in the latter. I'm guessing by the smiles and nods some of you might be with me. I won't ask you to stand and confess. You can, just sit. But I wonder, we want to control and maintain order in our lives, and yet Jesus makes it clear that his mission comes before all of our plans. Paul believed this so deeply that that's what he's trying to get across to all the people in Galatia. That we invest a lot of time and energy and money in controlling our lives. Because this is a chaotic world. It's an unsettling place to be. But I wonder if the deep call of being a Christian means giving up this illusion of control, taking risks, throwing ourselves into this turbulent world around us. Because this gift of God's grace frees us, but it also constrains us to love the other. We're free to love ourselves, but it constrains us to love everyone else around us. And that is not always easy. To let this mercy and this grace trump our plans and shape our lives? What would that look like? Somebody this week was trying to give me an illustration of backsliding, and she was saying it's kind of like sledding. How many of you have ever been sledding? Right, see, very few. You have to be from, yes, thank you. You have to be from the north where there's snow in order to sled. It's a lot more fun on snow, but I will say I have been sledding in Texas on a nice green grass hill with a trash can lid. It's not quite the same as on snow, but it's possible. But anyway, this person was saying that backsliding is kind of like sledding, and I wonder if our life is kind of like sledding with this grace of God. Because, you know, you're going down that hill, and you're having a heck of a good time. Screaming, laughing, crying, whatever it takes, that woohoo down the hill. But then what happens when you get to the bottom and you want to do it again? Well, you have to take your sled, and you have to trudge up the hill. And, you know, the hill outside my house in my hometown is darn long. It's a big hill. It's the best hill in town, but that's a big hill. It's a lot of work. So I wonder if this faith life and being a Christian is like that. When we come to realize the grace of God, boy, going down that hill, woohoo! It's a good time. But that everydayness of trudging back up, that everydayness of coming to realize that love and that grace in all of our situations, wherever we might be. That what if we did that with a smile on our face instead of grumbling like I did when I was a kid? What would it look like to reimagine the world where God's grace and freedom is lived and shown, even as we are trudging up the hill with a smile? Because no matter what, God's gift to us will not be revoked. Regardless of how well we live up to our own expectations or to the expectations of faith, that gift will not be taken away. You are already claimed. You are already blessed. So what does it look like then to live in this fresh start? This fresh start that's given to us by this gracious initiative of God sending his son. That it's God's timing. God's powerful act of deliverance, reminding us that we belong. How might that be lived out in our lives? I'm going to ask you to ponder on that as